Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing, free ball. Perfect! Garland went to the lane, locked the Mobley, pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! With the left hand and a foul!
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. The Cleveland Cavaliers came away with a 97-83 win in Game 1 against the Orlando Magic. It was everything that was promised. A defensive battle against two of the best defensive teams in the league. Carter, how you doing, buddy? We're coming live from Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
Yeah, we're at the Cavs offices, living the dream, brother. I'm trying to produce the stream from a laptop in a conference room. So, you know, with that comes some ups and downs, some me reaching awkwardly across the way. But none of that matters because the Cavaliers are up 1-0 to start the series.
Look, this setup's going to have some curveballs with it, just like the Orlando Magic threw at the Cavs in that game. But the Cavs navigated it incredibly well. For them to win by a considerable margin, I thought was incredibly encouraging. They were able to weather the storm every single time that the Magic would go out, and as Carter goes away, every time that the Magic would go out and make a run themselves, cutting it down to five, the Cavs came with an answer. It was exactly what you wanted to see, because even though the Cavs won by a healthy margin, you want to see them tested. You wanted to see them respond. When Mo Wagner's out there causing havoc, that they didn't fold and they rose to the occasion. And I was just really impressed with their ability to do so in this game.
Justin, they won the game and they won the fight. And like, that's something that I think, you know, goes a really, really long way for this fan base, which, you know, frankly saw this team get pushed around a little bit.
Yep.
In last year's playoff series. That we watched the Knicks win the physicality battle. And like, you know, you're not going to win every single engagement with a team as feisty as the Orlando Magic, but the fact that the Cavs won enough to really gum up their offense, put the clamps on, buddy. Like, this is a muddy, muddy game, and in Orlando, you know, couldn't quite get unstuck.
Yeah, we won the mud ball battle without a doubt. Cavs had a plus 14 rebounding advantage in this game. Even though the Orlando Magic won the turnover battle, I thought the Cavs did a good job of at least kind of weathering those storms. We know that Orlando is elite at generating those turnovers, and you know, I think the one thing that kind of helped outweigh the turnovers there was that at least the finishing was strong and efficient from the guards, because both Garland and Mitchell had turnovers that I think you'd want to have back, trying to do just a little bit too much, but both of them efficient from the field. Mitchell 11 of 21, Garland 6 of 11, including a dagger to close out the game at the end. I was just really happy with their ability to handle the pressure and bounce back from some of those early game mistakes.
Yeah, it was weird. You know, the turnovers did come in bunches, you know, and normally that, it's funny, normally that's like a really bad thing to have, you know, 3-4 possessions in a row get end in turnovers, but I think it's a credit to the fact that the Cavs defense was so stout that I didn't feel like, you know, Orlando was able to knock them out, you know. Mm-hmm. They had these bursts of really, really physical on-ball defense, but, you know, ultimately, like, it was like in this game, it kind of felt okay that they came in bursts, because that meant, okay, they ratcheted up the pressure. Cavs, you know, took the punch. They took the punch, but their chin was strong.
Yeah.
And like when that happened, they did just, you know, whether it was a timeout, whether it was the guards just hitting a couple timely buckets, whether it was getting into transition to just to kind of unclog things a little bit, I felt like the team was able to, you know, they were able to weather that storm and kind of readjust themselves to the pressure.
Yeah, they did a really nice job of that. And I think the other encouraging thing, too, was that the Cavs set the tone early. They played with tempo and didn't let the Magic get set up in the half court. I think that is absolutely crucial in the series, and it's going to be something we're going to need to continue to keep our eye on. The other encouraging thing is now the Cavs are 2-0 against the Magic when they have all five of their starting lineup. And the starting lineup plus 15.2 net rating in this game. You love to see that. And, you know, obviously, one of the big questions has been, does the two big lineup work, right? Is this going to be a series where that's really playing into the Cavs' advantage? And, you know, Mobley and Allen set the tone. Mobley hitting two threes early on in this game, Jared Allen 16 and 18. I just felt like in a game where you're playing a matchup where Orlando's got three or four 6'10 guys on the court at any given time, for those two to be the biggest of the big men really played into the Cavs' favor.
Yeah, I mentioned it at the onset of the series is that Evan Mobley is the only Cavs starter who actually has a size advantage against his counterpart.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, this Magic team is just so big and strong and tall and long that, you know, it was going to be it is tough sledding to finish. And I thought the Cavs did a really, really nice job in the floater range. And Evan and Jarrett, both when they got mismatches, when the Magic did switch themselves into Cole Anthony on them or Jalen Suggs on them, they got deep seals, they drew fouls, and they finished with a lot of authority. I don't really, you know, obviously I have to check. Other than Mobley's two threes, I don't really think they had a lot of non-layups or dunks. Like, yeah, they were mostly, you know, strong physical attacks to the rim. And, you know, that was something where, frankly, we saw them wilt a little bit. A lot of their shot attempts were either drifting away from the hoop or, you know, just not forceful at all in last year's playoff series. Something that we knew was going to have to happen as part of this was that this team was going to have to get better internally. They were going to have to solve some problems that the Knicks faced. Like, it wasn't all just bring in more outside help. It was, hey, your top four guys have to play better, and I thought all four had really strong games for the most part.
Yeah, and I think some of that's a product of how the Orlando plays defensively as well, right? Like, they're going to put a lot of pressure on the guards. They were really challenging the Cavs at the point of attack, and when you're blitzing every single ball handler and you're putting that pressure, you're going to end up with some of those possessions where, oh no, Cole Anthony's on Evan Mobley, or, you know, those type of little mismatches. And for the Cavs to be able to at least navigate that on enough of those possessions and find the big man when they have that advantage, that's important. Because there were some possessions where Orlando kind of had a similar thing where Franz Wagner makes a cut underneath the basket, he's got Donovan on him, or you know, other ones of those mismatches, and Orlando's just not able to get them the ball, right? Like, the Cavs, I think both teams came out with a very strong defensive game plan. That was going to be one of the things we were keeping an eye on. For Jonathan Isaac to start at center, I thought was really interesting. We were curious, if he did start, does that mean that one of Wendell Carter Jr. or Mo Wagner is out of the lineup? We saw that the answer is no. They are comfortable playing very big, comfortable playing both of those centers together.
A 10-man rotation for Jamal Mosley, which he's run one of the deeper rotations in the league this year, but like, still, normally in the playoffs, you kind of expect that to pare down, and it did not.
No, honestly, that's going to be a thing to keep an eye on for game two, is does someone fall out of the rotation? The fact that they kept going with Mo late in this game, I think they want to have that physical edge that he brings. They want to keep testing the Cavs in that way and see if they answer the bell. I'm still curious if Markelle Fultz is going to play as much as he has.
His minutes did not feel impactful. You know, the Cavs, he wasn't catching the ball. And like, talk about a guy who really needs to go into transition,
yeah,
to hurt a team like this Cavs team. Like, you know, the Cavs were able to get away with a bunch of Sam Merrill minutes, even though Sam, I do not hit a three in this game, or did not hit a shot in this game. They were able to say, hey, Sam, just go hide on Markel because they're not pushing on us, and we trust you to do your job in the half court on defense, knowing that we're going to have at least one of these great rim protectors there. And given the fact that Orlando shot so poorly, you just, you know, it's just too tough sledding for a guy like Markel. And it's funny, of the two between Markel and Ingles, I kind of wondered which one would feel like the odd man out for them. It does feel like Fultz's minutes felt a lot more empty.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have to keep going to Joe Ingles because he's one of the few guys on this Magic team that has experience. The other person that, you know, has experience coming into this is Gary Harris. Tough game for him. I thought his decision-making was a little bit rushed. But, you know, when you're trying to figure out, okay, which one of these guys is going to fall out of the rotation when if they do decide to pare down, I think Fultz might be that answer. But that might be a give and take too, right? Like, do the Cavs attack Cole Anthony, and that forces them to go to Fultz. But I thought for the most part, from a rotation standpoint, I really like what the Cavs were doing. Every lineup that played at least 5 minutes had a positive net rating for Cleveland on the night. You really love to see that. And, you know, the question that we had was, do they go nine deep? Do you go to a Sam Merrill? And, you know, we saw a little bit of Merrill in the first half. I believe he played four total minutes. But I kind of like that. You know, a little bit of a feeling out process. Garland's in foul trouble.
And Karras had a bad first half. He was not nearly as impactful as he was in the second half, so it makes a lot of sense. And it's not like Karras had a crazy box score game. He went 2 of 8 from the field overall, but I do feel like his second half minutes were a lot better.
Yeah, but those two baskets were
huge
and ones at times that they really needed it. And I'm just going to be curious to see if he does struggle or if, you know, foul trouble opens up other opportunities. I think JB's still going to try to get Merrill minutes in those spots. And if he catches fire, you roll with it. If he doesn't, that's okay. He's still going to change how Orlando plays you defensively. And I think that's the important thing. And it just gives guys a breather, right? Like, you saw at times Darius needed one. That back was acting up, receiving treatment on the bench. That's going to be something to keep an eye on in this series. But
how important was it that Darius bounced back and hit some absolute, like, killer threes, that little 1 foot pull up, you know, like, it felt really important that late in the game, you know, because he came out of the second half and we went, uh-oh, he isn't moving well. Suggs and Harris are picking him up full court. They're ripping him. He's not getting back well. He's not moving well. And so you're like, oh, no, is this just going to be the rest of the game? So the fact that he came back, fought like hell on defense, you know, whatever treatment the staff did for him, it seemed to really help him because he came back. After he checked back in, I thought he was a different player. And in the fourth, he iced the game.
Yeah, it was really nice to see. And, you know, I'm going to shock you here. I'm going to come with a little bit of a sunny side up. View of the Darius Stunner back thing, because, you know, with the back acting up a little bit, I believe he aggravated it when he was navigating it in the paint and he was kind of throwing the ball back out to the perimeter. If your back's a little bit tight here, it almost forces you to be just a little bit more decisive. Hey, I'm not going to do as much probing. I'm going to pull up when they go into drop. I'm going to kind of take what's there, and if not, give the ball up.
This is the first "it's good to be having back spasms"
It is not good to be having back spasms, but I think it forces him to almost play in the way he needs to play, because there were so many times where, you know, it felt like he was trying to do just a little bit too much to beat the defender. Obviously, I want the back to be right, but I'm just saying, like, you're trying to build those positive habits. And I think one of the adjustments they got to make going from game one to game two is they need to make sure that they're not trying to do too much to beat the Magic one-on-one defenders one-on-one, because, my God, Jalen Suggs is one of the best guard defenders in the league. He was terrific tonight. And Gary Harris, even though he had offensive struggles, was terrific.
And Jonathan Isaac, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You
know, there's a reason why Magic fans wanted him to start at the five, even though, you know, he's not much of a shooting threat, though. I think he shot better than most Magic players this afternoon from three. But, like, you know, like that, I think you're very much right. I think that Cavs did a great job attacking the drop.
Yeah.
Darius and Donovan both killed them in the floater range today and hit a lot of really, really timely baskets. Would you expect Isaac to still be the five starting next game? Because there is something to be said for if you're Mosley and you're like, crap, I gotta ungunk my offense. We couldn't get enough shooting. They had a couple easy layups when Wendell Carter Jr. was on the floor, and he hit a corner three just because either he was shooting or the Cavs so big on the floor was just shading in his direction a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I think about that Paolo floater where he kind of had George in jail in the pivot, and he just kind of stepped through, and you know, you were like, Evan, that's probably Evans. I'm like, yeah, he was looking at Carter up at the top of the arc. So I wonder, do you think they'll go to him? Because I'm not sure I would, because I think they did not do well on defense in his minutes.
They didn't. I think that might be a game three adjustment, if at all. Like, if they really go out, and if in game two they can't generate offense, I think that's something you change to going back home. You have the extra day off to practice and really kind of figure out what you're going to be doing defensively. I just think, you know, early on in a playoff series, you don't want to make the adjustment too soon. Like, that was one of the things I always enjoyed with Ty Lue, was he let lineups breathe, right? You would go 3-4 games before those adjustments because, hey, sometimes it does come down to execution. Sometimes it does come down to, all right, I'm just going to make a little bit better decisions in these spots. And what I really like from a Cleveland standpoint is it does not feel like we need to make an adjustment. I like the looks we got, and defensively, until Orlando makes you change what you're doing defensively, you do not have to change anything about your identity. You know, Paolo and Franz both had pretty good games, but it didn't feel like it was ever commanding. They were taking the shots that the Cavs were giving them, and if Paolo's going to hit some mid-range shots and whatnot, I'll live with that. And then on the offensive end of the floor, I thought the Cavs generated really good looks. What did you think of the looks they were taking from three? Because Orlando took more threes than Cleveland, but it kind of felt like Orlando took them because they just could not get inside the arc.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Orlando got up 37 threes in the end. I think that number skewed by the last 2 minutes of the game where they kind of knew they had to hit some if they were going to try to make any kind of statement. You know, it was a lot of Paolo just kind of being like, well, I guess if you're not going to guard me at the top of the arc, like, those were some pretty clean looks. And, you know, like, of looks you're going to expect Paolo to make, that's some of them. But, you know, Franz Wagner hit a couple, and he's been, you know, one of the worst three-point shooters in the league over the last couple months. So, like, I think you feel okay with that. And then you look at the Cavs, and for the most part, you know, Evan got up 4 threes, which is great. Garland got up 6.
Yeah.
Donovan got up 8. Strus got up 5. Merrill got up, I think, 2 or 3 in his 4 minutes. Niang got up 4. They just weren't hitting. But I think for the most part, they were pretty wide open.
Yeah.
I think they did a nice job of getting, you know, I think they got Orlando in just enough of a rotation. I really liked how the offense was flowing, especially, obviously, excepting those stretches where they were, you know, giving the ball away a ton, you know, those 3-4 possession stretches where they were just kind of giving it up. I thought they were doing a nice job, and I think I'll actually give, you know, I know we're talking about threes, but I'll give a lot of credit to Jared Allen. Mm-hmm. He was screening his ass off today.
Yep.
He was just setting, he was flipping angles. He was setting decoy screens that got slipped, and then he would screen into kind of like a pin down. Like, he was just moving all the time as a big. And I thought that, you know, it's tough to get a team like Orlando into rotation because they like to play that drop, and they're just so big and fast. I thought the Cavs got a lot of looks going horizontal because of that. It wasn't like they had a ton of crazy blow-by dribble penetration. Mm. And then to the guards, I thought they did a great job doing that hostage dribble where, you know, they run a pick and roll. You know, Suggs and Harris are maniacs, so they go over every time, which is they can do because they're maniacs.
Yeah.
I thought Darius in particular, for a game, you know, it's not like a crazy box score game for Darius at all.
Yeah.
But I thought he in particular did an excellent job of just doing that freeze dribble with Harris or Suggs on his back hip, not giving them an angle to the ball, and either getting a wide open dunk, which sucked in the defense, or spraying out when he needed to. So I think that, you know, I think if they play this game 100 times, the Cavs probably hit a hell of a lot more than the 8 threes they made. And I'm not sure I would say the same for the Magic. Now, obviously, you know, 21% is unseasonably terrible. So, like, obviously they would probably hit a few more as well. But the fact that the Cavs won this game by 14, where, you know, Orlando's used to winning when they can't shoot.
Yeah.
The Cavs are not used to winning when they can't shoot. So the fact that you win by 14 with such a poor shooting effort, that's really, really good and really, really exciting.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind is it's a 1 p.m. tip. Like, early games, it's normal to see cold shooting games, and teams just aren't in their normal rhythm. But you're right. It is an encouraging sign.
Did you know Paolo had 9 turnovers tonight?
That sounds right, honestly.
Oh, my gosh.
Evan Mobley did a terrific job on him. But, like, with these early tips, you kind of expect bad shooting. And when you have two teams that are this good defensively, it's not that surprising. Like, but, you know, ultimately, you kind of expect that they're going to hit more of these threes. Max and George missed a lot of good looks. I like their minutes otherwise, but they just weren't connecting at the clip that you expect. And really, sometimes that happens. Not everybody is reliable at connecting as Zoom is when it comes to video conferencing. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Carter, I can't believe we've gone this long in the podcast without really digging into how great Jared Allen and Evan Mobley were. Let's start with Allen because, you know, that's a guy that caught a lot of flack, and he was ready for the moment. He went out physical to Orlando consistently. He drew a Tristan foul, which was great, where Gary Harris just wraps him up under the basket, just trying to stop him from getting the offensive
rebound. And we saw Tristan doing the point.
Tristan recognized it. Tristan was so active on the bench. Yeah. My God,
always
that guy never
is.
Shuts up.
Always.
I love it. I absolutely love to see it. But for Jared Allen to step up, I believe this was the fifth most rebounds by a Cavaliers player in a playoff game for Jared Allen. Just a terrific performance from him.
Yeah, and, you know, he caught the ball in, you know, there's just arms everywhere with this Orlando team. It is really, again, they're great at forcing turnovers. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they, you know, that you look at the box score, Mobley only has one turnover, Jarrett has zero. That shows decisiveness to me.
Yeah.
That shows that, you know, when they caught the ball, they knew exactly what they were going to do with it. You know, not crazy high assist games either, but that's okay, especially since I'm sure the potential assists were not there given that the Cavs could not shoot. But, like, ultimately, I think it was just a really, really cool game for Jared, who's one of my favorite players, you know, from a vibes perspective on the team. And, like, you know, and they were nasty, you know? Mm. Like, Orlando was so good. I'll tell you what, again, you know, I went into this game being a really, really big fan of the Magic. And even though, you know, 83 points is about as ugly as you'll see in a playoff game at this point, I left it still being like, yeah, this team really has a belief system, and they know what they're doing.
Yep.
You know, every time Franz or Paolo, you know, buries that shoulder into the defender's chest to create that space and requires that help defender to take that one step towards them, there is someone flashing backdoor every time. The biggest difference in this game was that Evan and Jarrett were there to meet that guy. Even when he got what would be a clean look against 99% of the other teams, they just did such a good job helping. You know, normally when you get hit in the chest by someone as physical as Paolo or as Franz, you're kind of like, oh, okay, you got rid of it. I can breathe. But they didn't do that.
Yeah.
They got hit. They maintained their composure. They saw the leak out pass, and they challenged them at the rim. You know, that's a major reason why Orlando couldn't score, you know, because they got to the line. They drew fouls.
Yep.
They just, you know, they couldn't shoot. And when they got to the rim, the Cavs were always there. You know, I'm not sure how many blocks Evan had. I'll pull that up. He had 3 blocks. Felt like 9. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just killing them at the rim.
Yeah, second and third effort was terrific from Evan and Jarrett. I thought it was also there for Isaac. I really liked what he was doing offensively. Got them a couple buckets in transition. Obviously, that will be one of the things to keep an eye on going into game two is his status. He did take a knee to the head from Mo Wagner. If he's not playing, I'm calling for Marcus Morris. I'm ready for it, man. Like I was locked in. I was ready to go. Nobody hurts Isaac on my watch. But I really liked his minutes, and I thought you felt his presence defensively, and you know, just they were all locked in. That was the really, really encouraging thing. And you know, to see them kind of learn from those playoff experience, I've seen people poo-poo the idea that, well, you know, they lost in 5 games to the Knicks. Is that even really playoff experience? No, experience is experience. Like, you learn more from your failures. At least I do. I learn more from my failures than I do my successes. Yeah, exactly, right? You know what to draw from, and I think the next test for this Cavs team is we've seen them have a very good game in the playoffs last year, game 2. They went out, they executed, they did what they needed to do, but they weren't able to recreate that. Now it's time to figure out, can you put your foot on their throat? Can you come out and execute the same plan on both ends of the court? Both teams are going to know what one another are running. Like, they knew going in, you're going to have an even better feel for that now going into game 2. You need to go out and execute, keep that intensity, get self get greedy. Make sure that you get this second game and you go up 2-0. Because if you go up 2-0 in this series, you start to feel a whole lot more comfortable. You've protected home court, and then you're playing with house money of, hey, let's go steal one. Let's go steal game 3 in Orlando. Let's really, really put pressure on a young team that doesn't have the experience that we have.
Yeah, and it's also just important because Orlando's awesome at home and bad on the road. So if you give them that confidence right to start a series that, like, oh no, actually it'll be fine playing here.
Yeah.
Like, that is just such a devastating way to start the series, and that's how it felt against the Knicks last year.
Yep.
So the fact that, again, you know, just looking through the box score, other important things that I saw in terms of that speak to that toughness, that speak to that connectedness, the gang rebounding. Max Strus has 9 boards. Garland has 3. Niang has 3. Okoro 2. LeVert 4. Merrill 2. Like, everyone's helping.
Yeah.
You know, the Cavs out-rebounded Orlando by 14 in this game. 54-40. And like, that is so important for a team that, as I'm, you know, if you listen to our series preview, I talked a lot about how this is a gang rebounding team. They don't have anyone that just, they don't have a masher. They do it collectively. So, you know, just seeing all the plays where, you know, Isaac Okoro, you know, someone like Suggs is about to go grab a rebound, or Isaac's about to go get a rebound, and Okoro flies in and just bats the ball out to the player who actually gets the board. There was a lot of that kind of action. I thought that was a really important lesson for this team, which, you know, they'd really, again, fallen off on the boards in the post All-Star break stretch. So I think if I'm the Cavs, I'm really making sure I'm going out of my way to praise that, because it's really, really important. Justin, can we talk about George Niang?
I was going to go there.
I'm
right. This is a George Niang series.
I'll tell you what. There's something about being in the room for George Niang going nuts and talking unbelievable trash.
Yeah.
And meeting the moment when, you know, Mo Wagner came in and he had main character energy in the worst possible way. He wanted to come in and set a tone. You know, he had a hard foul on Evan right away. Okoro ends up getting the tech, which is outrageous, but whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's immediately clapping. And he's talking, you know, really trying to to set some kind of tone. So the fact, you know, again, you know, we talked about it at Media Day with George, where I was like, you know, normally the shooter, the stretch four, isn't your tough guy. George was our tough guy. He was as animated as I've seen him all year, which is saying something. He was talking smack the whole time. He met Wagner every time Wagner tried. And then on the defensive end, you know, one of the reasons why I was concerned it might not be a George Niang series is, especially when Isaac isn't on the floor, he's got to be the primary guy on Paolo or Franz. Turns out when Isaac was on the floor, he was still the primary guy on Paolo. And for the most part, he did an awesome, awesome job. I think you really made a good call at that. You know, since Paolo is not a crazy explosive player, there are some shades of the Julius Randle matchup from last year where he wins by bullying and with craft and with footwork. And George, I'll tell you what, he did so well at keeping up.
Yeah,
in that spot, you know, I'm sure that that's one spot where I do think Orlando will probably get a little more creative. You know, there was just a lot of straight up ISOing of Niang, and you know, you really can challenge him if you're putting him into pick and roll action, making him, you know, hedge and recover and all this stuff that, you know, big men just don't normally do. But like, man, do you got to give him his flowers for this one, because I'll hold the L. Like, I was like, I don't know about this series for George, and he didn't even hit any shots, and I still thought he was probably our most important role player in this game.
I'd say that's fair. Like, honestly, I really liked what he brought from a veteran presence standpoint. Him driving down the court and drawing that foul and getting the crowd fired up. Like, he was locked in. And I think if Orlando does get a little bit more creative in trying to attack him defensively, I still feel like you can kind of rotate him over, whether it's on Wendell Carter Jr., whether that's on Mo Wagner, whether that's on Jonathan Isaac. Like, I think there's going to be spots where he can at least use his physicality on the defensive end of the floor. And then as the series progresses, I expect him to hit more of those shots. Honestly, I felt the veteran presence from the Cavs in this game in a big way. Max Strus, I think he didn't shoot the ball well. He didn't have the best offensive game. But, man, he was crushing it on the defensive glass. He was locked in defensively. You could tell the communication is always strong with him out there. And that's where I really noticed it. It was Max Strus, it was George Niang, and honestly, Tristan Thompson from the bench. Having those voices, I think, is so important for the Cavs. Even when Garland's back was locking up, he was kind of hanging his head at one point. Tristan was yelling at him to get the head up, don't let Orlando see you being hurt and whatnot, right? Like, it's just that kind of mentality. Guys that have been there, that guys that have been on deep playoff runs, I just think that that's worth its weight in gold when it gets to the playoffs, and that was something that they just did not have enough of last year.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Yeah, and you know what else they didn't have enough of last year was great play from their best player.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, you know,
Donovan. Core showed up today.
Yeah. Donovan had a bad series last year.
Yep.
And man, did it feel nice, especially with all the concerns going in. Is he going to be playing on one leg? Is he going to be, is he going to be able to hold up on the other end of the ball? Is Jalen Suggs and Gary Harris just going to attack him and make him miserable if he's not, at 100%? Going into the game, I think yesterday he told people that he was 100%, and I was like, okay, that is a thing you have to say,
he's playoff 100%. Yeah, maybe nobody's 100%.
I really did want to just kind of see it for with my own eyes. And, what was really cool was I talked, this was like maybe 2-3 weeks ago. I was like, maybe the ramp up for him isn't to just get him his knee to 100%, but it's to figure out how he's going
to
succeed
with
his level of explosion that he has right now. He didn't have a crazy explosive game at any point. He had a couple. He had like that one steal at the top of the paint where he really skied up to get the steal. He had a couple rim attacks that were really athletic. But for the most part, this was a craft game.
Yeah.
This was a physicality game where he was using angles. He was using his shoulders to create that little bit of space, go to the floor. I mean, he had more floaters tonight than he has in a long time.
Yep.
Obviously the three-pointer, he was actually the only one who shot well from three, I think. He went 3 of 8. I just felt like he had such a complete package, and 30 points on 21 shots is like, that's the Donovan I think we need to expect. Because even in that game one last year against the Knicks where he had a high point total, it was not efficient. It was not, it was not his best game, I would say. And like, this felt like, okay, I think going into the postseason, I was like, are we going to get a Donovan that makes this even interesting? Is he going to be able to get to where we need him to get to? Just knowing that like, knees suck, and it's really hard. And I feel like I left this game more hopeful about the rest of the postseason, not just because they won, but because Donovan put together such an in-control game against a team that's kind of tailor-made to make a guy playing on a bulky knee miserable.
Yeah, I mean, welcome. Welcome, Carter. I have confidence in Donovan. I thought he looked terrific. You're right, though. Like, he did look explosive, but he wasn't relying on it the same way that he has in the past. And I think that's a really encouraging sign, because defensively, it's not going to get a whole lot harder than the Orlando Magic. Like, what they're able to do at the point of attack, the length that they have at the second level, like, that is as big of a test as you can have. And, so far, the Cavs have passed that test. But it's just going to come down to, can they sustain? Are they able to land that second punch in game two and really take command of this series?
One thing I also want to say about Donovan and Darius that I thought was really great is they really tested Orlando at the rim. And they did the best job I feel like they've done in some time of doing that, of just holding that extra beat to make Jonathan Isaac commit to them,
right?
And it's funny, I will say this. This is one thing that I maybe didn't value enough about this Magic team, or kind of gave them too much credit for. They're not a great rim protector team. If you really look at their roster construction, like, Franz isn't like a stout at the rim guy. Paolo isn't really that. Wendell Carter Jr. isn't that. Mo Wagner isn't really that. They get a lot of their work done before the shot goes up.
Yeah,
I feel. And when the Cap, so when Isaac was off the floor, I thought everything looked a lot easier for the Cavs. And when he was on the floor, they did just good enough. I mean, and he certainly had his possessions where I was like, damn, this guy is a problem on defense.
He had that recovery on Jared Allen where Strus just threw it a little bit too high. And oh my God, the way that he skied in, it was really impressive.
Yeah, note to the Cavs, no more ISOing Jonathan Isaac.
Yes.
Try, if you find yourself with him with like 8 seconds left, just throw the grenade somewhere else.
Yes.
But, I think they did a good job of getting him to commit at the rim and making him take that, not just the one step, but the second step that made it easy for Jarrett or Evan to finish over him. Because in an even fight, Isaac's going to win that battle a lot. You need to yield an advantage before you attack a guy with that level of a defensive toolkit.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I'm almost shifting back where You know, earlier I said maybe that's a game three adjustment. I don't know if you can go away from Jonathan Isaac. Like, I just don't think you can sacrifice that at the rim given the Cavs' ability to get to the rim. And, you know, the fact that they were able to get to the rim like that with the perimeter defense that Orlando is throwing at them, man, like, I just don't think you want to give up on that back line. So it's going to be really interesting to see what those adjustments are. Any closing thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
You know, I'm just really proud of the team. It was, it's just so different leaving game one of a series. The Cavs are leading a series for the first time since 2018.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's, you know, that's 6 years since we've been up in a playoff series. That feels really, really good. Feels really, really special. And, like, you know, it's just so changes the tenor of even the conversation around this team. You know, the fact that they won ugly, but not in the way that they won ugly last year. Like, I thought generated really, really good stuff.
Yep.
In this game, in the way I don't really think Orlando did. So I think they, you know, this is a 14-point win. You should always be thrilled with 14-point wins in the postseason. But, like, I think in a lot of ways it could have been a bigger margin if the Cavs executed a little bit better from a shot-making perspective. You know, I'll be really, really excited to see how they handle the adjustments, because that's the one thing that always blows me away is every time I'm like, I don't think I know what adjustment, I don't think we need to make any adjustments. I'm always blown away by, like, the opposing coaching staff coming up with one thing, like when New York went to guard screens last year, and it just completely broke what the Cavs were doing on defense for like three games.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll be interested to see what this Orlando coaching staff can come up with, because I think right now the tactics favor the Cavs. The Cavs look like the better team and the team with more options.
Yeah, I mean, from a game plan standpoint, the Cavs are on point. The amount of backdoor actions and you know, cuts that Orlando was running, like, they were getting good, you know, looks in the passing lane, and the Cavs just were ready to swallow that up. They were absolutely prepared. They knew that Orlando was going to try to emphasize that, and they blew up all of those actions. That was really, really encouraging to see. And, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the side of the bracket the Cavs are on and whatnot. This Orlando Magic team is a real test. This is a team that has been up as high as two, three for a lot of this season. If you can go out and you can sustain what they did tonight and really kind of make a statement in that series, I think that's something that you can really hang your hat on in comparison to, okay, you know, we just got an easy matchup and we were able to kind of roll through them. This is a character building series for a young team that has a lot of runway ahead of them, right? Like, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Isaac Okoro, all these young guys have a ways to go in terms of, you know, reaching their individual potential and, you know, getting onto that level that Donovan Mitchell is helping elevate the team, right? Like, that's the beauty of adding Donovan Mitchell, is your expectations are so much higher. The way that teams plan against you is so much more intense. And I think that that is the environment that really leads to meaningful development. So if the Cavs are able to, you know, continue keeping this on the right foot and making a statement in the series, I think that that's something we can feel really good about.
Yes, we can, buddy. We'll be back. Before game two, baby.
We will be back pregame before game two, as well as postgame after game two. So big thanks to everyone that tuned in live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win! Unbelievable!
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.